Chamber of Commerce will now come to order. It's approximately, it's actually 3:15 on Wednesday, April 8th. President or Representative Hughes, pardon me?
4:15.
Oh, 4:15, I'm sorry. Thought we'd switched on daylight savings time. But Representative Hughes is with us, Representative Culver, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. We have three items on the calendar today. The first is eight remaining confirmation appointees that came to Labor and Commerce. Conrad Jackson will, from my office, will address these.
For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. As you said, Mr. Chairman, the members have a draft memo before them with the members of, or the names of, eight additional appointees to various boards and commissions.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux.
And I need to apologize at this time to the committee. I inadvertently left these names off the prior memo, so we need to just, with the committee's indulgence, deal with these today and have them referred on. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is just read these names into the record. All of the members have had an opportunity to review the resumes and qualifications of the folks that I'll be, the names I'll be reading. None have expressed interest in speaking with them or concerns about their qualifications. So with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to read the memo into the record. Appointed by the governor to the boards of massage therapists, David Edwards Smith, Ron Gibbs, Tracy Gilmore, Shirley Nelson, and Amanda Unser. To the Board of Examiners and Optometry, Dr. Stefan Strelka. To the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers, Renee Piszczek. To the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board, Lake Williams. And Mr. Chairman, I believe the Vice Chair has a motion to make to forward these names on to a joint session of the legislature.
Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to advance the confirmation of appointees referred to the House Labor and Commerce Committee for consideration to the joint session of the House and Senate for consideration. And I'd like to remind members that this, your signature on the committee's report in no way reflects the, your member, your vote during the joint floor session.
Seeing no opposition, which I didn't think there would be, the names will move forward. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the House Bill 178, Workers' Compensation, Medical Fees, Delay. Conrad will explain what is going on. For the members that were here last year, this was the medical fee reimbursement bill where we had a pretty tight timeline, and I'll let Conrad explain the rest, but I might add it passed out of both the House and the Senate unanimously, except for a couple people who were absent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson and the committee. The bill before you today, House Bill 178, is exactly as the chairman described, a five-month extension to the time constraint set by House Bill 316 for the creation of a new workers' compensation medical services fee schedule and implementation by regulation. This bill could really be likened to a simple board extension, and I made the mistake of actually using that silly word, with a zero fiscal note. As some history, last year's House Bill 316 passed the Medical Services Review Committee, the MSRC, with creating a fee schedule based on Medicaid rates with a multiplier for various services. Once a conversion factor is set, the bill requires that the Commissioner of Labor and Workforce Development approve those, approve the multiplier. Then regulations would be drafted and implemented by the Workers' Compensation Board. All this work currently, under the current language of House Bill 316, must be completed by July 1. The MSRC has met numerous times and is very close to completing their work. The department has...
Can you give the new members a real brief makedown of who is on the board?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The MSRC consists of 9 members. A member from the Alaska Medical State Medical Association, the Alaska Chiropractic Society. One member is from the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. One member is a health care provider as defined in AS0955560. 4 members who are not, and this is quoting from statute, who are not within the definition of a health care provider and the commissioner's designee. So all of the stakeholders have a seat at the table in the discussion and the setting of these conversion factors. As I said, the department has requested the extension because the MSRC is very close to completing their work, but there is concern that they may not have quite enough time. The bill has a 0 fiscal note, as all of the costs expected for all of the work to be done were covered in House Bill 316 last year. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Monagle, the director of the Division of Insurance, is here to speak to more the details of what the MSRC has been doing over the last year, how close they are, and the importance of the legislation.
I might add, since the bill passed, I have not attended any of the meetings. I've stayed hands-off and left it to the Department of Labor. But, Mike, would you come up and join us, please?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Mike Monagle. I'm the director for the Division of Workers' Compensation. And I'll answer any questions you may have about the committee and its meetings. We started meeting July of 2014. The committee itself was formed in statute in 2005, met for several years, made some recommendations in 2009, and then kind of faded away from activity. So the first thing we had to do when 316 passed was to resurrect the committee. We had to go out and find a couple of committee members who were no longer interested in serving, so we had to replace them. That took some time. We had to go out and get some requests for proposals to hire a subject matter expert contractor. That took, with the state procurement process, several months. We had to obtain data from several data sources, National Council on Compensation, Insurance, and Fair Health, among some others. We had to get some contracts signed. We had to get some non-disclosure agreement signed. So long story short, it was really about November before we got the ball really rolling with the committee. We've had some good discussions. We are one conversion factor away from completing our work. We have a meeting this month on the 20th. I fully expect that that last decision will be made. As was mentioned, we do need to make a written report back to the commissioner. I anticipate the commissioner will likely take public comment, which could be a couple of weeks. I'm then hopeful that she will forward those recommendations on to the Workers' Comp Board. We have to notice a public meeting for that. So typically about 30 days notice, the board would meet. I'm planning about June. Then they would propose regulations. We go through the normal regulatory process, which takes at least 30 days for public comment. Come back for final adoption and then to law and lieutenant governor's office. So really it's not being able to meet the July 1 date is our big problem. We do anticipate we can have the regulations in place by the end of summer. That will give the billers and payers 3 months to program their systems with the new conversion factors ready for the new CMS rates that come out on January 1, 2016. So this bill will help us accomplish that. The concern is that obviously we don't want July 1 to come around and have no fee schedule. That would be disastrous for everyone.
I might add, I've been contacted by one member of the committee who will remain nameless, because I think everybody in the room would know him. But he said he was originally skeptical about it, but he, after the first couple of meetings, he, I think his exact words were he was beginning to enjoy it, and that concerned him. But that's anecdotally the only person that I've talked to other than Mike and Anna Latham in the Department of Labor. But it's on track. We contemplated that we would have a pretty tight schedule, but we knew that, you know, nothing, it, you know, didn't have to be finalized till the end of the year, and we've got enough of a cushion now. And we're, like you said, one conversion factor away from where we can move it to the next step. And that's about it. Any questions for Mike while he's up here? Or,
thank you, Mr.
Seeing him. Thanks again, Mike and Anna. Any committee questions? Seeing none, I'll open it to public testimony. Anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, and I don't believe we have anybody online. Nope. With that, I'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move HB 178, version 29-LS0813/H from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the bill will move out of committee with attached recommendations and a zero fiscal note. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Item on the calendar is House Bill 66, Insurance Benefits for Deceased Teachers. This will be the first hearing on this bill, and this what this will generate is a fiscal note and an actuarial study. In a situation like this, where there are a number of factors, the state will have an actuarial study on it to pin down the fiscal note rather than somebody doing by guess or by golly. And with that, it looks like we've got Grace Abbott and Representative Sharice Millett co-presenting the bill. Welcome to the committee, and you've got our undivided attention.
Thank you, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. I appreciate you hearing House Bill 66. It's a very difficult subject to talk about, but I think one that needs to be addressed by the legislature. House Bill 66 seeks to address a side effect of a situation that we all hope never occurs, Mr. Chairman, and that is a state employee dying in the line of duty. Right now, when a state employee dies in the line of duty, we as a state provide no health care security for their dependents. These families are subsequently faced with not only the immeasurable loss of a loved one, but also the possible termination of their medical coverage. We as a state ask our employees, not only those in public safety, but across all fields, to provide for health and safety for our communities. It's only fair that when our employees give the ultimate sacrifice, that we honor them by supporting those they have left behind. House Bill 66 provides spouses and children of the state employees who have been killed in the line of duty with secure, stable health care coverage with the PERS and TERS health plan. And I know that's a confusing title for folks that have seen the teacher's retirement in the title and the public employees. This is not a defined benefit bill. This is actually just a line of duty death benefit. The retiree health plan ensures coverage that is common to all departments and positions and allows families to benefit from low deductibles and pharmacy costs. Families would be subject to all policies associated with the plan, and members would be able to elect additional coverage available to the plan members. This approach not only provides a level of comfort for families, but also provides clarity in the state's budget that is now presented with an uncertain cost to cover health care premiums for families. Right now, for those officers that die in the line of duty, we do have a line item in the operating budget that covers the medical coverage for those families currently. The last thing families coping with the loss of a loved one should be concerned with is losing their health care coverage. House Bill 66 provides security for families and clarity for the state when approaching a line of duty death as a state employee. This bill was a collaboration in the truest sense. Thus, we have representatives from the Department of Administration, Department of Law and Public Safety available to answer committee's questions, as well as our legislative legal. Also with me today, I have some members from the Public Safety Employees Association that will be testifying. This bill has been long in progress, Mr. Chairman. I have been working on the line of duty death benefit bill from a couple different angles. And this seems to be the one in my 7 years here that has come back. And since we're already doing it by proclamation and by executive order from our governor, we thought that we should codify it and put it into the state health coverage plan. So members that are serving in the line of duty will have the opportunity to know that if they are left alone with an insurmountable loss already, that at least their health coverage would be covered by the state. We have had line of duty deaths in all aspects of the state. We've had some folks that passed away, were killed in the line of duty in a helicopter crash. We've had public safety officers, which I know you've seen about in the news. We've had fishing game die in an airplane crash. So when we talk about line of duty death, it is defined in statute and what that covers. It's not someone that's sitting at their desk and has a lingering health problem and passes away from those causes. It's an actual line of death duty description that is codified, and those determinations for line of death duty are done through our department administration. I have Grace Abbott here, who has worked so hard on this bill. She worked for her previous boss, Representative Holmes, on this with me. For the last 4 years, we've been working on this, and this is kind of the fruits of our labor of those last couple of years. Is the bill before you? We've taken a lot of time and consideration, not only the cost to the state of Alaska and our declining revenue situation, but also the cost to those that have chosen the field of work where they are out in the public protecting you and I and our children and our grandchildren, Mr. Chairman. So with that, if you'd like to walk through the piece of legislation, Grace would be more than happy to go through the sectional with you. That might clear up any questions that you may or may not have on the bill.
Any questions for the sponsor? Got up easy.
Thanks.
Welcome back, Grace. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a minute. I think the first thing we need to do, though, is adopt CS's working document.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move CS HB 66 version /N is the working document.
Seeing no opposition, the CS is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Grace Abbott, Staff to Representative Sharice Millett. If you'd like, I can walk through the explanation of changes from version A to version N, if that would be helpful for members.
Yep.
Fantastic. One thing that I'd like to state before we walk through is that this bill really occurs in mirroring sections, one that has to do with the teacher's retirement health system and one that has to do with the public employee's retirement health system. So you'll see that sections may appear almost identical, but they apply to one or the other health system, and I'll make those sections clear. On page 2, lines 1 through 3 in version N, as well as line 13, these are changes that clarify when major medical benefits are available to dependent children of deceased teachers under AS 1425-168A. These changes eliminate a requirement for the children as well to be dependent on the surviving spouse in order to qualify. This also protects in the case of no surviving spouse and just a surviving dependent. On page 2, lines 14 through 19, these changes clarify that under AS 1425-168A, subsection 3, that major medical benefits are available to spouses and dependent children of deceased teachers who are eligible for any kind of pension under AS 1425-157, and not just a monthly survivor's pension. This change is intended to prevent the benefit plan administrator from interpreting certain provisions of AS 1425-157 to require a cessation of major medical benefits provided under AS 1425-168A on the date when, if the deceased teacher had survived, the deceased teacher would have qualified for normal retirement, so accounting for different age categories between the spouse and the member who was killed in the line of duty. The monthly survivor's pension would therefore terminate and without the changed language, the survivor's eligibility for major medical insurance would cease. On page 2, line 30, through page 3, line 7, this adds a new bill section that would eliminate the requirement that an active member of the defined contribution plan in the teacher's retirement system has to retire directly from that plan in order to qualify from the benefits. This new bill section clarifies that a member of the defined contribution plan is eligible to retire from that plan if the member has 30 years of service or reaches normal retirement age and has at least 10 years of service. On page 3, lines 14 through 17, these changes clarify that a deceased member's surviving spouse and dependent children are eligible to elect medical benefits under AS 1425480 if they have received any kind of benefit under AS 1425487 instead of when they would have been determined to be eligible for a monthly survivor's pension under AS 1425487. This change is intended to prevent the benefits administrator, once again, from interpreting certain provisions of AS 1425480 on the date when, if the deceased teacher had survived, the deceased teacher would once again have qualified for retirement. And without the changed language, the survivor's eligibility for major medical insurance would have ceased. On page 3, lines 23 through 24, this requires that an election by a member of the defined contribution plan in the teacher's retirement system not to participate in the retiree medical major insurance plan may become irrevocable upon application for retirement and benefits instead of upon application for employment, thus accounting for surviving spouses and dependents. On page 3, lines 26 through 28, this adds a new subsection H to AS 1425470, clarifying that even if monthly survivor pension benefits under AS 1425487B cease, that medical insurance under the defined contribution plan of the teacher's retirement system for a deceased teacher, surviving spouse, and dependent children would continue to be paid. On page 3, line 30 through page 4, line 6, these are some cleanup language for AS 1425480B to clarify some meanings. On page 4, line 24, this eliminates the section, a third person who receives major medical coverage under AS 1425470, subsection C, sub 3 or 4, is not required to make a premium payment under that coverage. This sentence was made redundant by the bill's addition of new subsection 1425470H. At this point, we get into duplication of changes to reflect both changes to the teacher's retirement system as well as the public employee's retirement system. So the next changes that you'll see will be mirrored in numbers 1 through 8 until we get to page 8, lines 25 through 28. At this point, this changes the bill's new definition of retiree in the defined contribution plan of the public employee's retirement system from an eligible person who is elected to receive major medical benefits under AS 3935880 to an eligible member under AS 3935870A who has retired from the plan. This improves the clarity of the meaning of retiree.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Tilton. Oh, no problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our last change is then the retroactive date. We changed the retroactive date from January 1st, 2014 to January 1st, 2013 to encompass more families who had suffered this terrible loss.
And again, for the people that might not have been here, we don't have a fiscal note yet, but they're working on it along with an actuarial study. And I guess who has the first question for Grace? Or Representative Millett. Representative
Colbert. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Millett, thank you for working so hard on this bill. This is very much in need. I feel like we're not living up to our obligation to Alaskans who were killed in the line of duty because their families not only suffer the loss of their loved ones, but they're put in financial hardship because of the death of major breadwinner, father, mother, and just morally, ethically, it's wrong. And I know it costs money, and I think that's the most difficult part in this environment, to get the legislature to act appropriately to take care of the surviving spouses and family members. And so this is a kind of a complicated bill. Grace was whizzing through this, and I was trying to keep up. I didn't quite get it all. Can you maybe back up and say what we have right now as far as it referenced surviving survivor benefits, death benefits, any reference to statute? What is that? What's the definition of that? And what do we have now? And this, and is this bill primarily looking at health benefits rather than a monetary settlement or to help the survivors with the loss of their loved one?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Culver, right now we have what everybody would have if they were separated from their job. I think it's a 30 days of health coverage insurance. This bill just covers health care for the surviving spouse and the dependents, and it actually puts them, and I'm not sure we were clear on that. We had some problems with working with retirement benefits. We've actually, through this piece of legislation, put them in the retiree health care pool, so they're not in the active plan any longer when their spouse or person who dies in line of duty. They are in the active plan. Their spouse or their dependents and spouse are moved over to the retiree program. So right now what we have is, of course, all of our public employees and teachers are covered under a union, so they have their union benefits. But as far as state benefits goes, they have they have the standard plan that we all have. We can opt in for death benefits through payment, and that would be the one-time payment through our you and I's our plan. But as far as line of death duty benefits, we give the standard separation of duty benefits for 30 days, and after that, they can, for health benefits, they could pay the COBRA, which you'll hear RC in some of our letters. If you have many dependents, the COBRA becomes increasingly expensive. So right now, we don't offer anything. What we're doing currently, absent of a statute, is the Department of Public Safety, in their operating budget for those that have died in the line of duty. You'll see a letter in here from Governor Parnell. It was brought to his attention, and how we got down on this path was talking to him. He did send a letter instructing Department of Public Safety to put an operating budget line item in every operating budget to cover those costs for those troopers and public safety officers that have died in the line of duty currently. So that's basically what we're doing. It's a year-to-year appropriation for those people that are covered. Governor Parnell covered under his letter, and I think it's in the back of your package that talks about his direction to the Department of Public Safety and to the line of the appropriation.
Okay, thank you. So, good job. This bill is typically dealing with the loss of health insurance to the survivors.
Correct. Okay. Through the chair, correct. This is just dealing with health coverage for the spouse and the dependents
and
of
you
the
talked
person
about,
who dies in line of duty.
You talked about the death benefits option. We have workers' compensation, which is strict liability, which only pays a certain amount for death on the job. And is that how we're handling? Because that's not going to take care of, my concern is the family, the surviving family. Do we have any safety net for monetary, if dad dies and the kids are young, mom dies, the kids are young, their financial future is forever going to be impacted by that event. So do we have a big insurance pool or anything where we're anticipating these kinds of traumas, and so that we're able to have a fund to pay out of that? Or I guess that's, I know I'm a little off topic because you have health care here, Mr. Chairman, but I guess my concern is the overall well-being of the survivors, that this event that is so traumatic to their family, that if without being there to support them, we are furthering the continuance of this event that has had such a devastating effect on that family. And we need to be there to support the families and try to do what we can to help them continue on life as best as possible without that support that they would have had of their family, because they lost one of their primary means of support for their future.
Through the chair, Representative Culver, we could, member from PSEA is here and could talk about their death benefits for theirs under, it's all negotiated under union contract, and then we also have, when you are employed by the state, you have an option to increase your death benefit coverage for a cost per month, and then, like you said, there's a workman's comp that cover there, but we also have the Department of Administration that can answer any of those particular questions that you may have, but just like anybody that signs up.
And that was a nice segue, because we've got 10 minutes left, okay, and we've got two people in the room.
Yes.
That have signed up to testify, and we've got four people outside of Juneau that have signed up, and I don't think it'd be fair to the people outside to limit them to 3 to 5 minutes, but I would like to bring Jake Metcalf up first. Can you keep it to 5 minutes, Jake?
I'll do it very quickly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jake Metcalf, for the record. I'm the Executive Director for the Public Employees Association, Public Safety Employees Association. I'm going a little fast here. I would like to just start off by thanking Representative Representative Olson, Representative Millett, for all the work she's done, her staff. I'd like to thank the
Grace,
she's that staff. She has done tremendous work on this. And in the Parnell and Walker administrations as well, because it's really been a team effort to come up with a bill. Just to give you a little background and maybe answer some of the questions, we represent about 700 to 800 public safety employees throughout the state. That includes the state troopers here in Alaska. And back in May, a year ago, next month, two of our members, Scott Johnson and Gabe Rich, were tragically murdered in Tanana while responding to a call. They had spouses and surviving children, and I think you're going to hear from Brandy Johnson later on. But within days of that terrible, senseless tragedy, we learned, as the representatives for the state troopers, that Scott Johnson and Gabe Rich's families and survivors' medical insurance would lapse unless they had opted for COBRA. PSEA has a health trust, and we provide two kinds of insurance for our members. One is a catastrophic plan, and the other is a family medical plan. Those members were covered under our family plan. It costs $1,800 a month, or somewhere around there, for the total cost of that premium. So under the COBRA plan, in order to get the family premium so that the spouse and children would be covered, it was going to require that much payment by the survivors per month to keep it. And then COBRA only lasts, I think, and I'm not an expert on COBRA, but it's somewhere between 18 and 36 months. After that, you've got to come up with your own plan. So it was obviously a real serious issue for our members, survivors, and kids. And so we started calling the state, got the Parnell administration involved in this, and it's led to this bill, which we think is important to the families. We support it because it provides spouses and survivors of public employees killed in the line of duty continue medical insurance coverage till the spouse or the survivors age out. Plain and simple, this bill carries out a duty that the state of Alaska has to comfort and assist families in a time of need. HB 66 also lessens the tragic loss and burden of being thrown into unexpected situations suffered by families when a family member of a public employee is killed in the line of duty. PSEA respectfully requests that you pass this bill. I'm open to any questions you may have. Again, I just want to thank you for having the opportunity to testify.
Oh, thank you. And for the people that have dialed in, Today we came under something called the 24-hour rule, so we don't have to wait a week to schedule the next meeting. And what I'll do is when we have one scheduled, we'll contact Grace, and Grace can call all four of you and give you probably close to 24 hours of notice when it'll be, and you'll be able to talk longer than Jake did. But any quick questions for Jake?
Yeah, just real fast.
Short one?
Yes. Just to, through the chair, just so I understand this, the not that I had a similar bill, but I didn't know that I could be as ambitious as Representative Millett's bill, which is a better bill.
She's had practice.
But the death benefit, I know there's a death benefit because I have a death benefit bill, and I assume that if a public safety person, for example, is vested, their family would get a pension at whatever level is required. This is about health care, right? That's where the gap was, and that's what this bill's about.
Through the chair, correct, Representative Josephson, this is about health care. I'll just give you a little facts about the Johnson and Rich situation. We had a contractually agreed-upon death benefit in our contract. We were in negotiations on our contract. The death benefit that we negotiated went from $100,000 to $200,000, but the effective date of the contract was July 1st. We had already agreed to that in improvement in the death benefit at the time that Troopers Johnson and Rich were killed. So they got the $100,000 death benefit, and they weren't able to get the $200,000 benefit because of the effective date of the new contract happening after the death. You know, it was an awful situation. So that there is a death benefit contractually set out, but this is medical, and it's completely separate from the death benefit.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Jake. Jeff Bray, JPD, I'm guessing.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Jeff Brink, and I'm a citizen of Juneau in Alaska. As you can see, I work for the Juneau Police Department, and I come here today as a representative of not only my brothers and sisters at the Juneau Police Department, but also statewide law enforcement. And I would just encourage you to consider passing this bill along. I think it's important to introduce my lovely bride, Molly, back here, who was going to testify, but she's not going to now. But I would
hate... We won't be closing out public testimony if, the next time we have it, if she wants... Nope, you don't want to.
So I feel for the families of Troopers Rich and Trooper Johnson, and I would hate to see that happen one more time in our state, and I think we can do better, and I would encourage you to pass the bill on to its next step, if at all possible.
You know, and I believe everybody at the table shares your sentiments, and those of the sponsor, and Jake as well. The crunch we're under is what comes in on the fiscal note and the actuarial study, and so I will commit that there will be at least one more meeting, and by then we will have that, and we'll have a pretty good idea on what's going on, and we'll get it out. The sponsor will be getting it at the same time we do. And with that, any questions for Jeff? Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And I think your wife has a sister that she doesn't know she has that I'm married to. Oh, no. You know what I meant, though. And with that, before I get in trouble, I think we will adjourn the meeting. We will adjourn the meeting after again saying that there will be another public testimony date, and we will get the four people that are waited anxiously today. And I apologize again for us running 2 hours late. And with that, we'll adjourn.